Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I am your host, Brian Keane, here to help you build and rewire your fitness mindset. Today's focus is very much on the mindset with today's guest, Laura Rhodes Levin, on not letting anxiety ruin your life. This is an episode that I'm so grateful that I got to record. Laura's team reached out to me and asked about coming on the podcast. And when I started to research and dive into her, I was like, oh my God, I need to talk to this lady. She has got some incredible ideas and tips on how to deal with anxiety. And I've been looking for somebody from the medical field and medical standpoint to cover this particular topic. And especially somebody that is an expert in anxiety and anxiety treatment, but doesn't necessarily believe in the one side Western world, take the antidepressants and just you'll be fine, or take the anti-anxiety medicine and you'll be fine. Laura takes a very holistic approach, which is something that I really connect with. Today's episode very much focuses on all things anxiety and mental health. So I talk a little bit about my story, and this was kind of accidental because the therapist in Laura clearly brought it out of me, which wasn't planned beforehand, where I talk about some of my own issues with anxiety and a little bit about depression, the things that I've struggled with. I've covered them in previous podcasts, and one of my most downloaded episodes of all time was dealing with mental health. I can't remember the number, but if you Google Brian Keane podcast and dealing with mental health, it will bring it up. And I have another podcast dealing with anxiety, so a lot of the stuff that I did to manage my own anxiety, and I've covered it in a couple of Q&As from different angles. But today's episode is with an expert on it. All of those are on my experience and what I've done and how I won't say overcame it, because I don't think you ever overcome anxiety or mental health issues, but I do think you manage it massively. And I'm in a very fortunate position now where I'm able to shift my focus in a very positive way because of a lot of tactics and strategies that I've applied, a lot of which I talk about in today's episode as I'm bouncing ideas back and forth with Laura. So things like bursts of stress, so cold exposure, heat exposure, subjecting myself to ultra endurance events, doing gratitude journaling, focusing on being present and in the moment, all these strategies and tools and techniques that I've used, and they're layered perfectly with Laura, who offers several that I had never considered or hadn't heard of in all the reading and research that I've covered in terms of trying to handle my own mental health and deal with my own issues with anxiety. There's some new stuff in here that I'm definitely going to be applying. So today's episode, we focus a lot on anxiety treatments, the amount of people suffering with it and why Laura thinks that is. Even though she's based in Los Angeles in California, there's huge overlap with Ireland and the UK. And I know people are listening to this podcast all over the world, but in Ireland and the UK, as of now, the number for anxiety and mental health in Ireland is 1 in 6 people, which is a lot. And that is just the people who admit it. As Irish people, we don't tend to be the best to be like, I have a problem. We just like kind of get on with it, which isn't always the best thing. So I think bringing some awareness to it and hopefully destigmatizing some of it will help in today's episode because of my own personal issue with it, and speaking with an expert and talking about some of the strategies that professionals use in a therapy or a therapeutic session or sessions. So some of the things we talk about: the power of being present and focusing on the I'm okay, books and resources for anxiety, how to find a therapist if that's what you decide you want to do, and one of my favorite lines from this episode, which I think sums up the entire podcast, that is, never make a permanent decision based on how you currently feel. And I think adopting that strategy when it comes to anxiety and mental health is probably, from my opinion, one of the most powerful things somebody can do. So that, and on top of, I also love how to be as happy as a seagull who just found a French fry. I think that's an amazing line. So without further ado, here is today's podcast, Don't Let Anxiety Ruin Your Life, with Laura Rhodes Levin. Enjoy. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of the podcast. I'm delighted to be joined today with my guest, Laura Rhodes Levin. Laura is a licensed marriage and family therapist and the founder of the Missing Piece Center for Anxiety. Anxiety is a type of fear usually associated with the thought of a threat or something going wrong in the future, but can also arise from something happening right now. Around 1 in 6 people in Ireland will experience a mental health problem like anxiety each year, which has steadily increased over the last 20 years. According to a recent study conducted by the Anxiety and Depression Society of America, anxiety disorders are the most common mental illness in the US, affecting 40 million adults ages 18 and older. So why does anxiety affect so many of us? How can those struggling begin to seek treatment? And what are the dangers of untreated anxiety? As Laura says, we see so many people seeking treatment when they're struggling with addiction or other ailments, but not nearly as much seeking treatment for anxiety. This is something that needs to change since we've all seen the terrible outcomes of untreated anxiety. I'm really looking forward to talking all things anxiety and mental health in today's episode. Laura, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Brian. Great to be here.
Laura, let's jump straight into it. Tell us a little bit about your backstory and what got you on your current path and kind of led you into the area of working around anxiety and setting up your center.
Oh, gosh, there's a good question. It wasn't really a direct path. As you know, life sort of leads you on these bizarre stepping stones. And then suddenly you're like, oh, is this what all this was for? But to make a fairly long story short, I always had anxiety. When I was 6, I thought there was a bear in the closet. My sister shared a bedroom with me and she would go to sleep in 5 seconds and I would just be up worrying all night. And this continued on through my adult years. And when I was 37, actually, and I'm 53 now, I had a heart attack. And it's really at that point that I slowly started to seek out what was all this fear coming from. And originally, I coped by, smoking a lot of pot and drinking a lot. But I was an overachiever in that, let's just say, and anxiety meds. And I've actually been sober now for 13 years. Thank goodness for everyone.
That's amazing. Congrats.
Thank you. And, it was really a series of events where I started with meditation and started teaching meditation places. And then one of the places I taught, a fairly prominent drug treatment center out here in Malibu, wanted me to learn a process called neurofeedback, which I'm happy to talk to you about later. And then people were saying to me, why aren't you my real therapist? I wish you were my real therapist. And I was in my 40s and I hadn't even gotten my bachelor's degree fully yet. So I went back to school and I got my bachelor's degree and I got my master's degree. And I focused on anxiety that, they said, if you're going to go to school, focus on what you think rings true for you, even if it's fear of a deck of cards, people will find you. And luckily for me, I guess luckily is an odd thing to say, there's so many of us that struggle with anxiety, depression, and trauma. And unless you have a drug problem along with it, it's really hard to get help. And so I founded the center and I'm so lucky to do what I do. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, I think one of the things I connect with so much, and as someone that's suffered with anxiety, and it's we may get into it later because my audience know a lot of my issues for dealing with it, having been through the self-medicating route similar to you, I now tend to use endurance sports to help me kind of just calm my mind down. So everyone has different strategies, but I really connect with that story because you've suffered with it. And as you said, the thing that reigns through or runs through for you, or that is truth for you, is always going to be the thing that you can help people with the most. According to the ADDA, yeah. I mentioned it at the top of the podcast, over 40 million adults suffer from anxiety disorders, and that's 1 in 6 in Ireland. Why do you think the number's so high?
Well, and it's interesting that you say that too, because I am actually co-chair of the Special Interest Group for Integrative Health in the ADAA. So I'm a member of that. And the number one call that we get every single year in the last 2 years is, what is an alternate treatment? People are sick of the meds. I think that talk therapy is great, but it takes more than flour to make a cake. I tell people I think I'm a good therapist, but our anxiety is all over us, body, mind, spirit. But I also think the reason anxiety is at such an all-time high is we demand so much more of our brains than what they have been bred for. And I'm glad that you mentioned endurance too. What a fabulous way to cope with anxiety. You get all those neurotransmitters releasing all those good things. But I use exercise as an example. I know we think we're so modern on our hoverboards and stuff, but the world that we've designed today does not sustain us as human beings. We do not hunt mammoth anymore and climb the steeps for lavender. So we actually have to invent exercise. We have to go to a gym or run or swim, whatever the case may be, in order to sustain our bodies. The life we designed for ourselves, at least here in the States, does not work out for the bodies. We just sit around. And I think it's the same for our brains. We are asking so much of our brains, technology-wise, even speed-wise. It used to be if you traveled on a train at 10 miles an hour, when they first started train travel, people were getting nauseous and getting vertigo and passing out. And now we go, you know, in air quotes, 70 on the freeway, and our fight flight is constantly engaged, and rarely does the brain get a chance to rest and get restorative sleep. So that's going to put anxiety at an all-time high.
That's really interesting that you said that about the fight-flight response, because one of my personal strategies and techniques for dealing with my anxiety is exposure to stressors. I mentioned endurance there, but I also do a lot of heat stress in the sauna, ice stress in ice baths, and that really helps me as well. Because as you said, you're getting that fight flight response in traffic, you know, you're all up in your head, and it just kind of gets you out of your head. I'm curious, you mentioned technology also there. Do you think social media or technology in general is playing a role in our anxiety at the minute, and why, and one of the reasons that it might be so high, or what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, for sure. We're just getting so much more information and opinions. I think that we naturally, you know, I sometimes like to think of the term outcast, and what that originally meant was if you didn't fit in, you were going to be out of the cave, cast out, which meant death, really. So we desperately have, or we have an innate programming to fit in. And it's so hard to fit in these days in that there's so many opinions about what you should fit in with, how you should look, how you should act, who you should think about politically. I mean, the political environment today is tremendously anxious. It doesn't matter which side you're on. You know, the whole Brexit has had to have a tremendous, I'm making the assumption because I'm not there, and it's based on the media
safe get. Assumption that is literally, it was every news story for the last 8 months.
Right? And half the time you don't even know what am I hearing? Is this real? Is it not real? What am I voting for? What am I not voting for? We're so reliant on the information that we're getting, and we can't always trust it. I don't mean to arouse paranoia. I'm just saying that you have to do so much work to really feel like you're aligned with what you truly want to be aligned with. And that doesn't even get into weight and figure, you know, appearances, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, that's one of the things that and we may go down this path either now or later on, is I've had to identify a lot of my anxiety triggers. So the things that literally trigger my anxiety, and for me, social media was one of them. You mentioned figure there and weight, but that comparison syndrome, I found that would just ramp. Like, I literally don't go on social media after 6 p.m. in the evening for that exact reason. Like, when I'm getting tired and I'm feeling a little bit run down, my anxiety just peaks if I'm scrolling through Instagram. So it's interesting that you said it. There's so many, the political system system, the comparison, the comparing yourself against somebody else's weight or body composition or whatever it is, like, you need to identify that up front before. Do you think, just to kind of piggyback and kind of from a selfish question, as somebody that has suffered and has strategies but is always looking for more, do you think identifying anxiety triggers is a helpful resource, or what would be your kind of top tip for someone that struggles with anxiety? What's the first thing you recommend they do in order to kind of get a hold of it?
Oh, gosh, that is such a good question. Yay, Brian. Trigger is an interesting word, because I think we do need to know what triggers us, but I don't know that that is the first step for me. And I say this to my clients. If I know we think, you know, we're of these advanced beings with this frontal cortex that wants to figure it all out. And the frontal cortex is really an egomaniac. It wants to figure out everything, and it's really quite limited in that the part of us that's triggered, you talk about the fight mode, that's in our amygdala, that's in our limbic system, which is a completely different part of our brain than the frontal cortex. So if your dog, so basically what I'm saying is we're animals. We are animals that like to think about things. And if your dog is triggered, you're not going to say, what's triggering you, Brandy? you're going to soothe it. And so one of the things that I really work with my clients is working with your five senses initially to soothe yourself. Because most of the time, when you have time to think about your anxiety, that means that you're not actually really being threatened, right? If you're really being threatened, you're running. So if you're thinking about your anxiety, you're most likely sitting someplace and you're okay. You're actually okay. It's just what your brain is telling you. You mentioned about you get home at 6 o'clock at night, you're tired. You see the Browns on Facebook and they're traveling around, you know, Mexico, and they look like they have all these wonderful things and you have nothing. But really, you're sitting in front of your computer in your lovely little chair and you're probably okay. So using your senses, we have things at the center, these little inhalers. Aromatherapy is a really fantastic tool. It's not just about lavender. There's lots of aromatherapies, clinical aromatherapies that release neurotransmitters. So one of the first things that I reach for, I carry in my pocket, is an aromatherapy inhaler, where when my mind starts going off into a zone, I just take that thing out. I smell it. Okay. Immediately, I'm calmed down a little bit. The reason why places like, you know, Hawaii or tropical places or beautiful mountain regions work is your senses have taken over. It smells good. It looks good. It feels good on your skin. The sounds are peaceful. And so you suddenly really don't care about your taxes when you're in these beautiful places, because you've come to your senses and you're physically in tune.
Yeah, I love that. I used to live in London. I actually lived in the Bay Area in San Francisco, and then I moved to London after. And now I live out in the countryside in Ireland and in a mountain range. Like, I'm literally, as we're recording this podcast, looking out on a massive mountain range.
Oh, and it's just beautiful.
It's, oh, the best thing ever for my mental health. But it's just, as you said it there, you're just staying so grounded and connected, and you're not worrying about all this silly stuff going on, because you're, whatever reason it is, as you said, the just being in nature, or the aromatherapy. You mentioned, I'm definitely going to try that, by the way, the aromatherapy inhaler.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's
no,
a great idea.
Awesome.
A very handy one that you can just throw in your bag. Is there any other strategies that you like? You mentioned the five senses, and that's obviously one of the processes is taking out the aromatherapy inhaler and just grounding yourself. Do you have any other
techniques? Yeah, it's not just stop and smell the roses. That was just a metaphor, everybody. It's everything around you. We live on a beautiful planet.
Do you have any other techniques that you go to that when you feel a and pardon if my language isn't the right way to describe it. The way I use it is I think of anxiety like waves. So I think of waves as anxiety because it always passes yes. over me. But that's the language I use. What would be any other processes that you would go to or techniques you would use that when you feel a wave of anxiety coming on? Or do you have any other ones that you recommend to clients or people that you work with that are kind of your go-tos?
Yeah, and I love that you say wave because I use that example myself. Everything in this universe that we're aware of comes in waves. Sound, water, your pulse, anxiety, moods, it all comes in waves and you do just ride it out. So beautiful, beautiful visual on that. You know, I'm going to say something that I used to shy away from saying, but I'm just going for it now. So I don't know how it will appeal to your listeners or not. And I'm not talking about religion. I'm talking about spirituality. The basic belief that you're going to be okay. We need this as human beings. I really, really believe that. And, you know, maybe I drank the Kool-Aid. I don't know. But I like to think of us as we're all part of the big, beautiful ocean. And when we are born, we get sprayed out like ocean spray. We're just these beautiful little droplets all around the place with the little rainbow, you know, on top of our bubble. And sometimes we feel that life, the heat, the pressure, whatever, is starting to shrivel us up. But when we remember that we're connected, for me, it's all about energy. That's where I find my spirituality is what energy am I connecting with? The other thing that comes in waves is a radio wave. We're speaking right now because of waves. And if I told you about these waves 200 years ago, you would have burned me at the stake for this sort of talk. And I don't know, have you ever had one of those days where, you know, you spill your coffee and you walk out the door and you bang your head trying to pick up the coffee and then your coat sleeve catches on the doorknob and you're just having one of those days. Or you wake up, you find a $5 in your, or what, euros in your pocket.
Yeah, either way, I'm not going to say right, no to either.
I don't know what the term is anymore, right? What you guys have gone back to, but.
Yeah, no, we're still on euro. So let's hope it stays that way. As of this recording.
Okay. So you find it in your pocket and someone lets you in on the roadway and the clerk smiles at you and you're just having one of those days. And I believe that we tune into different frequencies and fear has a definite frequency. It just does in my experience. So I've come more and more to believe in positive affirmations. When you read a positive affirmation over and over again, that really resonates with you. It can't be something that, you know, there's tons of them. So you can find one that resonates with you that just lets you know you're going to be okay. Because you have to remember the anxiety that you're experiencing is an imaginary construct, right? Yeah. Even if the things you're afraid of can be real, the way you're experiencing it is imaginary. And this is when it comes back to your psycho speech, if you will, of you have this inner child. And if your inner child is sitting in front of the computer and it's saying, I'm not enough, I'm not good enough, I feel lousy, you wouldn't say to your inner child, yeah, you're a fat piece of doo-doo. You just yeah. wouldn't say that to a child. You'd say, oh, honey, come on. Look out the window. It's beautiful. You have such a good heart. You have whatever it is. When you believe in yourself and you realize that you can be surrounded by love, there's always somebody, then that's a really good way to reset yourself.
Positive affirmations, they're something I've been doing for years as well for lots of different, excuse me, lots of different reasons. I write everything in the first person that, and as I said, you know, I'm worthy, I deserve this. All of these things have been very, very helpful for me. When you, yes. when you started doing that first, what did your process look like? Did you write it down? Did you repeat it to yourself? And did it get to the point now where it's something that's automatic, or is it something that you still have to do very consciously?
Well, it really started a long time ago with just eye rolling. I would hear these things and it just made me want to vomit.
I think that's just everybody's first reaction to it, though. I was the same. And not to hate on American. I'm like, that's too American woo-woo. I'm not doing that.
Right?
It's the same as gratitude journaling. Two of the things, positive affirmation and gratitude journaling, that have probably helped me more than anything else were two things that I was dismissive of first. I will completely back you up on that one. That that's how I was in the beginning, too.
Yeah. And I don't know. I feel like, and I don't know how accurate this is, but I feel like in a lot of ways, religion is on a downward kind of trend, if you will. It used to be the forefront of our thinking. Everything was around religion. But I think what we got out of that was spirituality. Now, I was raised Jewish, but I love shrimp and pork, and none of the tenets really, I mean, except for a sense of humor, do I really feel that connected to. So for me, that just doesn't resonate. But laughter, energy, that sort of spirituality to me feels very real. But it took me a long time to, after the vomiting part, I would see the occasional one when I was really in pain and go, okay, I kind of like that. And I would forget about it. And it's evolved over the years. I really wasn't one for journaling much. There's a lovely book called The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. I don't know if we're, I'm not officially promoting anything. I just found it was a wonderful way to help me get in touch with my own abundance. And what it has you do is write every morning, 3 pages, one of the things it has you do. And I was so opposed to that, Brian, I cannot tell you, but, I set that time aside in the morning now where I just read a positive affirmation and I write 3 pages and I write affirmations in the pages, either ones that come to me or ones that I've found. And I have become so attached to this morning ritual, which far beat turning on the news and just sitting back and watching the soap opera of life.
You know, that puts you into a complete anxious state straight away by putting on the news.
Seriously.
It's just the worst thing. I must check out that book. That's The Artist's Way. I did something similar. The gratitude journal is something that I've used, and I used it for about 6 months, and I found that it completely rewired my focusing on, for the lack of a better term, a focus of lack on the things I didn't have, and made me put me into a lot more of an abundant mindset on focusing on the things that I do have and that I'm grateful for. Do you have any other books or resources that you like or that have had a positive impact on you?
Oh gosh, over the years, so many. I mean, I mentioned that I was sober, so I have found a lot of freedom in the 12 steps, and there's a 12-step program just about everywhere in the world. But I think for anything, but I think that And this is where the computer kind of takes us away. One of my favorite things is wandering through a bookstore and just looking for something that appeals to you, something that resonates with you. I'm trying to think of The Power of Now was a very powerful one for a lot of people. And I think if you look at the Deepak Chopra, even, you know, you said, I don't know if you're old enough to remember this Saturday Night Live character.
YouTube, you, the school of YouTube, I've seen lots of it.
Okay, well, Al Franken used to do this character called Stuart Smalley, I think it was. And he would just sit and look in the mirror and say, gosh darn it, because I'm good enough and I'm strong enough and people like me. And it was such a joke. But your personal affirmation is out there. just look for it. I found a sign. I was walking along a pier and I hung this in my office. Today, I will be as happy as a seagull with a French fry.
I love that.
Right? Yeah. So it's everywhere. Just look for it. Just literally stop wherever you are and say, okay, show me some sign, some positive affirmation. And if you look for something positive, it doesn't even have to be in words. The words will find themselves in your head.
Oh, I love that. That's such an amazing line. I'm going to put that as the screensaver on my phone for the rest of the week. That's incredible. I want to pull it back a little bit. I mentioned the ADD at the beginning, at the top of the podcast, and that study showed that 36% of individuals don't receive treatment. And this is something I'm very curious to talk to you about as someone that I'm curious to talk about the dangers of untreated anxiety and what that means for you. Because when I was thinking about talking to you about this particular topic on untreated anxiety, I was wondering, do you mean untreated anxiety, or would you describe untreated anxiety as something that where you don't take any action steps, or do you mean where you go to a professional? What does an untreated anxiety mean for you? And then can you talk a little bit about the what happens to the people who don't receive treatment from your experience as a professional?
Sure. And that was a lot of questions in one, Brian.
Yeah, sorry. My brain is going like, I can literally talk anxiety all day as someone that suffered with it. Like, take it in whatever direction, whatever chunk you want.
I want to hear your story too. You've mentioned it a few times. It's so hard for me as a therapist to not say, what was your anxiety?
I can give you a little bit of a background, and I won't make this on the couch session for me, but very similar to you, it's something that I struggled with as a default. I would have a default to be constantly in that go, go, go comparison mode, worrying, which one of the things I tell my audience is I like to think of anxiety a little bit like a superpower. It means that you get normally, in my experience anyway, you get a lot done and it looks like you're very successful from the outside because you're always anxious and worried about doing the next thing, which can lead to outward success. But it's like driven from this inner turmoil. Like I always think of
beautifully said.
That's literally how most of my life has been until kind of in the last 3 or 4 years, my daughter being born, my daughter's nearly 5, that helped me a lot because it kept me very grounded and made me realize that I was focusing on the wrong things and I needed to kind of be more present in the moment, which actually helped my anxiety. And so to cut a really long story short, very similar to you, it's something that I would default to that anxious state, and I have to stay very present with, you know, the power of now, be here now, and focusing on positive affirmations and doing gratitude journals and doing endurance events and exposing myself to cold and heat and short-term stressors, like all of those things that I have to stay on top of. Like what I tell my audience is I think of anxiety a lot like sweeping the floor. I'm like, I can sweep the floor in my kitchen today and it'll be clean, but if I don't sweep it for a week or I don't stay on top of it, it's going to get dirty again. And that's how I feel about anxiety. Like I feel I have control of it and it's manageable, but it's something I have to stay on top of every day. That's just a little bit of my backstory with it. But I'm curious.
Oh, I so love and understand that. And what you said about your daughter is so true. And I will go to the series of questions. I've made mental note. this talk about being present is really what it was all about. I mean, that's what I loved about drinking. People think drinking is about escape. It is not. Drinking is about being in the moment. When you've got a serious buzz on, this music is great and the food is, and I love you, man. And you're not worried about rent. You're just in the moment. And that's what we crave so much, is to just be in the moment. And a little girl is a great way to, or a wrong way, to do that. Yeah. Sometimes it's like, oh my gosh, this moment is overwhelming. But anxiety is, first of all, essential to our survival. It's not what's wrong with us. It's what's right with us. It's just that it, I don't know if you know this about the nerve endings in your body, but our body actually spends more time desensitizing us than it spends feeling things. So the example that I think is a good example for that is when you put your clothes on, if you were consciously aware of every contact point that it had on your body all the time, it would drive you crazy. So we first feel our socks when we put them on, but then we really don't feel them anymore. Our body spends a lot of time deactivating what we're feeling versus experiencing it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, perfect sense.
And so anxiety is one of those things. It's something that gets activated on its own for our survival, and something that we need to learn how to fix every day, if you will, or soothe every day, because our amygdala has become overwhelmed. So let me get to the myriad of questions. When people say 36% of people suffer with anxiety, first of all, I think 100% of people suffer with anxiety. I shouldn't say the word suffer. We 100% of people experience anxiety in some form or another on a day-to-day basis. For those of us who have either inherited our levels of anxiety, because we do, we inherit hair color, and we've discovered that we also inherit emotions. They did a really interesting study, several, on Holocaust survivors' children. They're just a little bit more nervous in general than a stream of genetics that hasn't had to run or fear for their lives in a dramatic way. Anyway, so 36% of the people are the people who are reporting, right? So you have to figure there's a lot more than that who suffer with anxiety. They just don't report it. There's a lot of stigma around mental health, which, thank goodness, I feel is starting to evaporate. We're very proactive about our physical health. And if we're not proactive about it, we know we should be. And we even guilt ourselves about it if we're not proactive about our physical health. To me, mental health is way more important than physical health. And I don't mean that in as much as our mental health impacts our physical health. And vice versa, of course. But it makes me so sad to think that we've adopted the mentality in society that until we really are in pain, don't bother. You know, I mean, I don't know if you saw the movie The Joker.
Oh, it's unbelievable. I watched it. I just got back from Nevada there a couple of days ago. I was running an ultra marathon event in there, and I watched Joker on the plane, and it was just, I was like, oh my God, like this. That's one of the best, and again, I'm not sure what direction you're going to go with it, but like in terms of identifying with the character that clearly has mental illness and what it can, you know, obviously it's a created, made up character, but it was the first movie that I felt captured it, that I had watched in such a, oh, this is a normal person, this is what's happened to them, and this is the result of a mental illness that's just been like a fire that's been fanned. I'm not sure, again, what direction we're going to go with that, but I was very excited about that movie.
No, I love it, because to be honest, I haven't seen it, but I heard that there's a scene in it where he's in some asylum and you realize only people who are who've had such horrible things finally emerge, that they go get help. And oh my gosh, just elementary school alone is enough to give anyone a need for proper mental health. Yeah. Being on a schoolyard and the pressures on a schoolyard that we experience by the time we're 8 it's just so important to go. So it's not, to me, it's not about getting help. I love your kitchen floor analogy. You don't want to walk around in dust and dirt, even if it's a small, low level that gives you a little allergy. You want to have a clean, comfortable environment to live in. And mental health is all about that. It's just about having that clean, crisp, feeling good state so that you can go out and enjoy this world that we work so hard to create. Do we really enjoy it? I actually don't call my office my office. I call it my cabin because I like to play in there. I see clients every day, but I also watercolor in my office and I do puzzles and I journal and it's my play house because I don't want to feel like I am working all of the time, even though I love my job. We have a sand room, a tropical room at my center. And I had a lawyer client once who's like, well, I wish I could have sand in my office. And they said, why can't you? It's your office. So he actually put a sand tray under his desk and he puts his feet in the sand while he's sitting at his office. So I think that mental health shouldn't be something that's dealt with when you're not feeling great. I think it should be at the forefront of every day of feeling good in your brain.
I'm going to deconstruct that a little bit just so my audience can even connect with it more, because I spoke in the first book that I wrote. I have an anxiety section in the first book that I wrote about exactly what you said there, that I literally had to get to breaking point before I went for help. Like, I literally put in a book, it's called Crying in the Front of the Steering Wheel. I remember when my daughter was born and, you know, myself and my partner at the time weren't getting on. I was preparing for a bodybuilding show, so I was very like calorie depleted and making all these choices that were just bad for my body, and I just bawled into the steering wheel. And I was like, just as you said it there, it took me to that point before I'm like, I need to do something about my mental health. I'm like, I can't feel this way anymore. I don't want to feel this way anymore. But like, there was warning signs for 9 months, 12 months, 18 months before that. I just ignored them. And it wasn't until it got to the point where I was broken, where I felt like I feel like I'm at rock bottom. It was relative, you know, first world problems, like I had a roof over my head, I had food in my stomach, but that's not what it feels like.
It's all relative.
Yeah, that's not what it feels like. You feel like the world is collapsing. Like, I think self-imposed prisons when I think of anxiety. I'm like, I've created all of these prisons myself. But at the time, I had to wait until I hit breaking point. And I think your message is so positive that it doesn't matter what part of the journey you're on, whether you're at that breaking point or you're before it, or you just have a little bit of a dirty floor and you don't want to be walking around, if we're keeping that analogy, it's something you can fix now by putting some sand into your office, or, you know, these tactics that are a little wins that you're aiming for every day, which I think segues perfectly onto the next thing I want to ask you about. For those that are at home struggling to seek help, what is the first step you would advise people take?
I think going to a therapist is a beautiful way to start. I don't have a problem with antidepressants. In full disclosure, I take a small antidepressant myself since I hit menopause. That really, really threw me for a loop. But I'm not a fan of anxiety meds. Anxiety meds are benzodiazepines most often. And what they do is just set you up for more anxiety. A benzodiazepine is by nature an addictive drug, which means that once your body experiences it, it's going to want more. And the way it gets more is by creating the atmosphere that gets it more. So it leaves you in a constant anxiety cycle. So please, no, like Xanax, Valium, Ativan, all that stuff, I think is not the way to go. Calling a therapist, picking up the phone and reaching out to somebody is so important. Sometimes that's a therapist. Sometimes that's a best friend. Sometimes it's, you know, I don't know. The reason why I think therapy is good is it really surprises me how often in a therapy session when I'm first starting off, I'll say something that to me therapeutically feels very 101, but is mind-blowing for the person across from me. And so when you need your car fixed, I don't need to figure out carburetors and engines, and I'm it's just not my hobby. So I love to just drive into some place and pay and they fix my car. I don't even really want to know what they're doing. Just fix it. And I think mental health is the same way. I love seeing a therapist regularly, whether I'm in a struggling place or not in a struggling place, because it sweeps my floor, as you say. So I think that's a good place to start, is a helpline.
Can I ask a question with that? And this is one that's very...
No, I'm sorry. You can't.
No, that's it. We're done. get off the line, Brian. No, I'm curious because I think there's people that are listening to this podcast that are very similar to me, that I massively see the value in talking to people and therapists, even though I've never used it myself. How would you recommend people find the right therapist? Or do you... what would be your recommendation for somebody that is looking to get help with a therapist? As you said, you know, you find someone you connect with, etc. What would you recommend as someone that, similar to your 101 there, I wouldn't know the first place to start. What would you recommend to me or anybody else in my position who would like to have somebody else that could help them and sees the value in it but has no idea where to start?
Sure. And this kind of blows me away, but we get a lot of our clients through Yelp. I don't know how popular Yelp is over where you are.
Yeah, it's big, yeah.
But if you literally pull out your phone or Google therapy near me and put in your zip code, something is going to come up. And I think it's just like finding a doctor you like or a gym instructor that you like. You go out and you try different people, and then you find someone that you really resonate with. It may sound daunting to do, because it's like, well, I don't want to sit down and tell my whole story over and over and over again, but happiness takes work, and it's worth it. It's worth it to make that call, speak to the person on the phone. You get a lot from people on the phone. Speak to this therapist. Hear what their philosophy is. Is it resonating with you? Even if it doesn't even make sense in your head, even if you're like, oh, I'm not really a woo-woo person, and this person was woo-woo, if you felt good after you spoke to them, great. So that's what I would say. Pick up the phone and ask your friends. I think that people kind of keep mental health on the down low. And to say, hey, you know, I really feel like I want to talk to someone. Do you happen to know? Or do you have a cousin who has a cousin who has a barber who knows? So really, the resources are at our fingertips, truly.
Yeah, I think that's why I love speaking with the likes of you, Laura, on the podcast, because it destigmatizes it. Like, knowing that people like you, people like me, have lived through it, have been through it. And I know some of my most popular episodes have been solo episodes of the podcast where I just talked about my own issues with mental health. It's one of my most downloaded episodes, just because people didn't put me in that bracket. And, you know, like, I've felt all, like, I think every stream on the mental health barrier, I'm in a very fortunate position now that I stay on top of cleaning my floor, but it wasn't always like that. In addition to seeking treatment, and there's some great tips there that I'm definitely going to take on board, what are some other coping methods that you suggest to people?
So I'm going to go back to your wave, if I may, because when mental health gets to an extreme situation and people are talking about not wanting to be here anymore, that's just the end of the spectrum for I'm not comfortable with my situation. You sitting behind the steering wheel and crying is a statement of whatever this is, I don't want to do this anymore. And what I tell people is, never make a permanent decision for a temporary situation. Everything passes. Even the most hard, complex, heartfelt traumas that we've been through eventually pass. So it's really important to know that no matter where you are in this cycle of, you know, even if it's just, I come home from work every night and I snap at my kids and I disconnected from my spouse. And I hate when I feel that way. Okay, that moment is going to pass. But now what can you do to prevent those moments? What can you do to change that? What coping skills can you adapt that change those waves where we naturally hit when we're hungry, angry, lonely, tired? Halt, right? Stop. Do something to feel better.
I connect so much with that because, like, there's such a powerful line, like, don't do something, I can't remember the exact line, but it's, you know, don't do something permanent because of the way you feel right now. You know, as someone that has suffered with that and has been at that point twice, but the, just to play devil's advocate on it, as someone that has suffered with, from three major mental health issues in my life, one when I was bullied when I was a teenager, you know, I remember that was the first time ever when I'm like, I don't want to be here anymore. But that led me to the gym. You know, that was literally the thing that one of the reasons I joined the gym was I need to get stronger. I need to get bigger so people won't pick on me. And that set me up for a career down the line in what I do.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of these perceived downtimes, you know, when I was steering and crying at my steering wheel, I'm like, that set me up for a way better life down the line because I changed up what I was doing at work. I changed up that particular relationship. I changed up a couple of things in my life and it set me up for success down the line. But as you said, don't make any permanent decision based on how you feel right now, because in a lot of cases, from personal experience anyway, when you're living through it, you come out so much stronger the other side.
Oh, the best. You know, what do you use to grow fruit and flowers is manure. I mean, pain, unfortunately, is often the cornerstone of growth. And it's that when we go, I just don't want to, and just fight for yourself. Do whatever it takes. Even if you feel like there's no fight left in you, there's always a little. And that's where the spirituality is just so important. You just haven't found your purpose yet. I didn't find my purpose till I was in my 50s. And I only found that through hitting a tremendous bottom. I mean, I wasn't just like a heavy drinker. I was in the hospital. They said, you're going to die. You've got liver poisoning. You've got pancreas poisoning. You're not going to live unless you get sober. And I was like, well, give me an Ativan. I'll think about it. That was really my answer. And it was only through hitting that bottom that, oh my God, the light is so brilliant. So what I tell people who are experiencing darkness, just keep searching for the light and it will be so, so worth it. It's so worth it.
Oh, I love it. And I'm going to finish it on, to piggyback on what you said, searching for the light. One of my favorite African proverbs is like, if you fall down on your back, make sure, or if you fall down, make sure you land on your back, because if you can look up, you can get up. And that's something that I've always, when it came to my mental health issues, anytime I ever got a knockdown, and they still come, don't get me wrong, but I'm always like, right, if you get knocked down, fall on your back, because if you can look up, you can get up. And that mantra, that's one of the things that I repeat. You know, you spoke about positive affirmations, that's one that tends to get me going when things set me back. Laura, I cannot,
well, and even if you fell on your face, you could still look up. You can still look up.
So true. Laura, cannot thank you enough for your time, for the amount of value you have tips. And I literally have a page full of notes here that I'm like, right, aromatherapy, get some lavender. I'm like a full page of notes here. So thank you so much. Can you tell everybody listening, where is the best place for them to connect with you, to reach out, and anyone that may be in the Malibu region, if I'm not mistaken, where they can check out your center or where people can connect with you? If you want to share that now, that would be amazing.
Sure. And I do want to thank you so much for having me on and for sharing your journey and giving this a voice. It's so important. And so if you are anywhere in the Agoura Hills area, which is in the San Fernando Valley in Los Angeles in California.
Oh, the completely different coast.
Right. You can find me at the Missing Peace Center for Anxiety. And if it's not me there, it's whoever you reach out to. There's somebody there. And if it is me, I'm always honored to be a part of anyone's journey. You're not only going to be okay, you're going to be great.
I love it. And do you have a website or any social media channel that you use that you normally push people to?
Sure. I would have rethought it in hindsight, but so it's, my website is missingpeaceforanxiety.com, but that is missing, like lost and found, missing peace as in peace of mind, P-E-A-C-E, the number 4, anxiety.com. So missingpeaceforanxiety.com.
And for everybody listening, you won't even have to remember the spelling. I will link it up in the show notes. You can literally just click on through, keep it super simple, just say, in case, I'm like the worst for Google searching on spelling and stuff. So I'll link it in the show notes on briankeyfitness.com for anybody that wants to go and click on through. Laura, thank you so much again for your time, and thank you so much again for all you do.
Thank you too.
So there you go. An absolute pleasure chatting with Laura today, talking all things anxiety and mental health. I'm so grateful. This is one of the reasons I love this podcast so much, is getting to talk to somebody and pick their brains for 50 minutes, an hour on a topic that is very close and dear to my heart, and something that I wanted to talk on the podcast for several reasons, from selfish reasons, of course, to try and pick the brains of a leading expert in the world on, in terms of anxiety and anxiety treatment, but also to try and destigmatize the topic of mental health in general. It's something I've covered on previous podcasts. I've spoken about it in books, The Fitness Mindset, Rewire Your Mindset. And I do believe, as I said at the end of the podcast, that the worst cases, the worst parts of your life and the worst times in your life are normally the seeds for future success. But you just got to keep going. You got to keep plowing through. So as always, if you like today's episode, a little bit of a different direction away from fitness and away from health today, focusing on the mindset side of things today, be sure to subscribe on wherever you listen to podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, Stitcher, etc. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please leave a review or leave a rating to let other people know how you find it, because that's very, very helpful on the algorithms to get the podcast out there, which helps me get on more amazing guests like Laura. So yeah, as always, if you enjoyed, hit me up on Instagram, Brian_Keen_fitness. Catch you all next week. We'll be right back.